You're doing great, Pat. Just one more hour left.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
A couple of odd stories I want to share with you. This one just happened recently. This guy's name was Marty Martin. William H. Marty Martin. And he died this summer by being bitten by a snake. And you'll say, okay, that's sad. Well, here's the interesting backstory. He was a respected and widely known snake researcher, a herpetologist. So the AP has this story, and this is from, you know, a couple of months ago, but it's worth thinking about for a second. He died after being bitten by a snake the day before a captive snake on his property, after he captured it, I should say. He was 80 years old. He continued to make arduous mountain hikes to document and count snake populations in remote sites, according to Joe Villari, who manages the Bull Run Mountain Preserve in Northern Virginia. And he would actually go out there with Marty Martin on these snake hunts. He was in his 80s. He was hard to keep up with, he says. He made it a point to join Martin on his semi-annual treks to remote mountain dens where the snakes live. John Seeley, a rattlesnake researcher from Stokesdale, North Carolina, who knew Martin for more than 30 years, said that Martin was perhaps the foremost authority on timber rattlesnakes, a species that he had studied since high school. As a boy, Martin found a population of timber rattlesnakes in the Bull Run Mountains. This, to me, is like the worst possible nightmare. To find a population. Cyrus, can you imagine stumbling upon a, and the word population is doubly scary, a population of timber rattlers? Because that suggests to me like hundreds of them.
Worst job ever.
Ever. No matter how bad you may think your job is, not you, Cyrus, you've got one of the best jobs on the earth.
That's a fact.
No matter how bad you think your job is, I think this would qualify as worse. So he was known throughout the community of snake experts for his field work and research and his ability to find and document species that make themselves hard to find. He says they're extremely secretive animals. Yeah, until they bite you. Deaths from snake bites are extremely rare. The Centers for Disease Control estimates that they account for only about 5 fatalities annually in the United States, which is amazing. Dan Kyler, a toxicology professor at the University of Minnesota and an expert on snake bites, he said a second snake bite can be more dangerous than the first for some people, and rattlesnakes can be more dangerous if they grow to a size that allows them to inject more venom. Age can also be a factor in a person's susceptibility. And of course, Mr. Martin was in his 80s by this point, and he had been bitten before in his career. Villari said timber rattlers tend to be docile. They avoid human contact, and they often won't even bite, even if they're accidentally stepped on. They save their venom for prey. So the irony here, you may say, why am I telling you this? Well, just the irony that here he is. He was a respected herpetologist. And how did he die? He died of being bitten by a snake. Now, I'm not, you know, suggesting anything other than isn't that ironic? Now, it reminded me of another guy, had nothing to do with snakes. His name was James F. Fix. And his name may not mean anything to you, but he was the author of a very, very popular book called The Complete Book of Running. And you may have seen it back in the day. That book came out, when did that book come out? I think that came out in the 70s, I believe. And the front cover shows a man's torso, I think with red like running shorts on, and his legs. You don't see his face or anything, but he's running. And he was the guru. He wrote 5 books, The Complete Book of Running, and several others, and he was about as fit as you could possibly get. He was as much of an expert on running and all the things. When he started running back in 1967, he weighed like over 220 pounds. He smoked 2 packs of cigarettes a day, and he decided to take up running as a way to rehabilitate a tendon injury while he was playing tennis. And so he lost a ton of weight, and he began to extol the benefits of running and jogging, etc., and he became a renowned expert. So what happened? He died of a heart attack while he was running. That's the story. He died of a heart attack while he was running. 52 years old. He was jogging in Vermont, and he was about as fit as you could possibly be, and he died of a heart attack. Now, again, you may say, why are you telling me this? Well, I guess for this reason is that, number one, just remember that no matter how fit you are or how much you prepare or anything, you never know when God will call you. And he called these people, in the case of the herpetologist, called him at 80 years old. But what a strange irony that he would go out the way he did. May he rest in peace. And Mr. Fix, he died by running the thing he loved to do and the thing that had brought him so much success and health and whatnot. And it was in the midst of that he died. So it's just the unknown quality of life. And those stories, when I see stories like that, I think about that and how important it is to always be ready, to know that you are right with God at any given moment. So there's the takeaway, I think. 888-914-9149. How about Jose now in Miami? Hello, Jose.
Hi, Patrick. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
As well. I'm good. I pray for you every day, Patrick.
Thank you very much.
Listen, Patrick, I'm a first-time caller. Okay. I have a couple questions. I heard you on the first about the plenary indulgences.
Yeah.
And I'm a little confused about certain things. Like, you said something that I could go to the cemetery today, but that was on the first, and today is not the first. I'm trying to go there today and pray for my
mom. You can, because the church grants a plenary indulgence each day if you fulfill the requirements from November the 1st through November the 8th. So you can gain a plenary indulgence today. What is today? The 4th. So today through November the 8th, you can gain a plenary indulgence each day.
Okay, good. Well, we got that square. I was kind of confused on that. Now, the next one I got is, like, can I pray for more than one soul? Because I have a large family.
And, yes, you can.
Or do I have to just do? I can't pray at the same time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what the church says is that you can offer this suffrage, keeping in mind that suffrage does not mean suffering. It means that you're casting your vote, so to speak, or you're electing to offer the spiritual fruitfulness of this plenary indulgence, either for the holy souls as such in general, or you could say for all the members of my family, or you could say for one particular loved one. But it can be one or more people.
Okay, and if I want my family, just my family, can I say each one of their names?
Sure, yeah. Okay. Yeah, you can.
I got that one. That's good. I appreciate that. Now, my next question is this. Can I go to more than one cemetery from today to November 8th? And when I do that, I know you said I can, but in doing that, do I get another indulgence, or is it still the same, or how does that work?
Yeah, so let's say today you go to the cemetery a mile from your house.
Correct.
If you were to go to a different cemetery at 3 in the afternoon today, you don't gain another plenary indulgence. You can gain one each day. You can go to the same cemetery each day. You can go to a different cemetery each day. The location of the cemetery is immaterial. But you can gain one plenary indulgence per day, the church says.
Per day.
Yeah.
Okay. And the plenary indulgence resolves these past sins in general? Do I have to name that out too?
Well, no. So let's just kind of rehearse what the church's requirements are to gain a plenary indulgence. So the first is that you have to receive Holy Communion, go to Mass and receive Holy Communion, and go to confession within the octave. And that refers to 8 days. It could be before or after, but within 8 days, one way or the other. And to be free from all attachment to sin, which means you make an act of your will, Lord, I renounce all of my past sins. I'm sorry for all my past sins. Now, this presupposes, of course, that you're in the state of grace, which you would be if you've gone to confession. And so you need to be free. And this means, again, it's your will saying to God, I desire never to sin again, Lord. I know I'm weak and I may very well sin again, but here and now, I am unattached to any sin, even venial sin. And you say prayers for the petitions of the Holy Father. So you pray, Our Father, Hail Mary, and the glory be for the petitions of the Father intentions, excuse me, of the Holy Father. And then you perform the indulgence act, which in this case would be you visit a cemetery and you spend even just a few minutes there praying for the repose of the souls of those who have died, the ones that you have in mind. So with all, and you have to intend to receive the indulgence as well. And then you receive the indulgence, and then tomorrow you could go to the same or different cemetery. And you wouldn't have to go to Mass again. You wouldn't have to go to confession again. You can. There's no reason that you couldn't do that, but it's not required that you do that part each day to gain the indulgence. But you would say the prayers for the Holy Father's intentions, and you would make that act of the will, renouncing all sin. And you can do it again the next day.
The prayer for the Holy Father intention, I can do them in the cemetery as well, right?
Yeah, correct? You can do them in the cemetery. You could do it when you get up in the morning. It doesn't have to be done there.
Okay. Well, I do them in the morning. I pray for almost 3 hours every morning when I get up. So
impressive.
I do all my prayers. Like I'm starting from my, even the act of contrition, all my prayers are, when I leave the house at 9 o'clock, all my prayers are done. So
that's awesome.
I should be covered. I will still do them when I go to the cemetery. One thing. How about the prayer to the four souls? Right? Can I pray mm-hmm. that also in the cemetery as long with this with these prayers?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a good idea to pray for the holy souls in purgatory every day, or even many times a day. The main reason, of course, that's good. And the main reason to do that is that there is a self-interest there because they will not forget you. And so you'll have friends in high places who, when they're in heaven, and if it should happen that you find yourself in purgatory, they will be praying for you, guaranteed.
Amen. Yes, that's right. So I do that. That's what I was worried about because I understood what you said, but I was kind of confused because you said if you go to the cemetery today and mm-hmm. you're on the Monday. Then I heard it again. I said, well, he said today, let me call him let me call him when I get a chance. And I call you today because of that. But yeah. Now I'm more like at ease right now. So I was on my way there today, but I wanted to talk to you before I go because I want to get all my I's dotted and my T's crossed, you know, before I go.
Right. Well, that's good. You sound like a very diligent Christian man. And I'm edified
Thank
by
you.
The fact that you pray for 3 hours a day. That's awesome.
I get up at 4 a.m. and start preparing everything. By 9 o'clock, I'm done with all my prayers. And
what do you do for a living, Joe, just out of curiosity?
Well, to be honest with you, I do Uber Eats.
You do what?
That's not Uber Eats.
Oh, Uber Eats. Okay.
Uber Eats.
That's cool. Now, you're never tempted to get into those bags before you deliver them, are you?
No, I don't do that, no.
That's,
I don't do that.
I didn't think
it's
a guy who prayed
no.
for 3 hours a day would do that. But I've heard horror stories.
There's a lot of things I also do that people say, you say that? Because everywhere I go and I meet the person at the door or by the window, I bless them. I say, God bless you. And I've gone to places where they've been like statues of Virgin Mary and other mm-hmm. statues there, and I pray for them. And now, as a matter of fact, I'll tell you a story. I went to a place where there was a Santa Barbara. Right. And I'm devoted to Santa Barbara since before I was born by my mother. And there was a big, taller than me. And I said, sir, can I pray to Santa Barbara? He said, sure. So I said the prayer to Santa Barbara in Spanish because I know about heart. So I said, and I stood right in front of him. He was like amazed. Wow. Okay. And, little things like that. But I always try to put God before anything.
Hey, I have one final thought for you, Jose, and I'd appreciate it personally if you would do this. If you go to relevantradio.com and scroll down, actually just go to the navigation bar and you'll see where it says support. Take a look at Ambassador Program. And what I'd like to invite you to do is to become a Relevant Radio Ambassador in your area there. And you'll see all the different kind of commitments and things like that. But we'll supply you, if you sign up and you want to be a parish ambassador, we'll supply you with materials that you can distribute. So, I mean, why not? If you're delivering the food to these different people, if you leave them with a Relevant Radio card, a Relevant Radio information card, they can start listening to Relevant Radio. And who knows what their situation is? They might be atheists, might be Catholic, might be, who knows what they might be. But you would be a roving missionary, and you're going to meet all kinds of people. And if you just leave a Relevant Radio card with them, it could change their lives. Wouldn't that be amazing? And then think about when you get to heaven and the big reunion party, you and all those people that you helped by turning them on to Relevant Radio will have. That'll be awesome. Thanks, Jose. Really appreciate your phone call. How about Krista now in Georgia? Hello, Krista.
Hi. I just wanted to respond or just add on to what you were talking about when you were talking about NFT.
Yeah.
With this caller. But I also, I could definitely feel the guy's team and his wife. We have six kids. Mm-hmm. And we did not plan for all six of them. They're wonderful. Mm-hmm. So God definitely knew what he was doing. But we really were looking for, something a little more stable. We're obviously not very good at tea. So I did some research and I found something called the Marquette method. And basically what that is, it's natural family planning, but you have access to a certified nurse that we had like scheduled calls for an entire year, once a month. I started when I was still like breastfeeding my baby, and there's all kinds of, they start you way, way early, but you use a fertility monitor but you kind of like use it for the opposite purpose, but there's very little guesswork there. So you just take tests every day and you're charting everything. They teach you. It was amazing.
This is the biomarker in urine, right? Where you
correct.
Okay. And you add that to the charting and the other observation techniques that you know what those are.
Yeah.
And so did you find that was a higher degree of exactitude using that method?
Absolutely. Oh, yes. Because it tells you when your hormones are high and then it tells you on your peak day.
Okay.
And so you know your counting is almost flawless.
That makes sense.
It was amazing. A lot of sense. And you do have to buy the monitor, and it was a little expensive. And the program itself, having these check-ins, I did a video check-in, like video calls with my nurse, and that you get the same one through your whole process, so you really develop a great relationship. Mm-hmm. But that, that cost, and the way that we thought about it was like, well, it doesn't cost as much as having a baby and raising a child through adulthood. So this is really just a drop in the bucket, but it's taken all the guesswork out, and I feel so much more confident. And it, I think it just around the board, it just really helped a lot. I feel like I got all turned around with all that stuff.
Yeah.
Why should we not? And all that. It was just, this really worked.
And you didn't have that nagging fear. You didn't have that nagging fear, I'm guessing, and worry.
Yes. Yes. It was all gone. It was so great.
Now, tell me, Krista, this is personal, I guess, but do you still have six children? Or did God bless you with any more children?
Yes, I have six now. We have one in heaven, so that would have been seven, but all six from, 15 to two.
Oh, how nice. Well, what a blessing from God. And I think it's important that I emphasize the fact that NFP, and I know you know this, but maybe some people listening don't, is not intended to be a form of contraception. That's not what it is. And obviously, Catholic couples like yourself, Krista, you and your husband remain open to life. You want God to have a say in your marriage, but at the same time, using your own prudence, you make determinations as to whether or not at this point in time, is this really optimal for us to have another baby? And couples can make that decision. So it's not contraceptive. It's not the contraceptive mentality. It's trying to work with what you've got and be open to God's plan for your life. So that's a great thing, Krista. I didn't know about that particular method, but that's helpful.
All right.
Well, thank you.
But thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah, you too. I knew about the biomarkers and I knew about checking the urine, but I didn't know what form of that was called. So the Marquette method, and I just looked it up. You can find it too online. Coming right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now on Relevant Radio.
Coming back at you. We have a little over half an hour to go. So give me a call if you want to be on the air. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Jenny in Toronto, Canada now. Hello, Jenny.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just have a quick question.
Sure.
Regarding the indulgences, if I understood you correctly, you said that you could pray it for as many people as you want and each day. And so all of those people will get the plenary indulgence and they'll go to heaven from purgatory.
Well, not exactly. No, so the Lord would apportion the benefit of those, of that indulgence to the holy souls as he sees fit. So in other words, it doesn't mean that every single soul in purgatory suddenly gets out of purgatory because you've offered this indulgence for them. But what it means is that they will participate in this benefit in some way, but God alone knows how each soul benefits. Now, if you were to offer a plenary indulgence for the sake of a particular person who may be in purgatory, then you would have I think, more certitude that that's going to be an even greater benefit for that person. So we still leave it in God's hands. We don't presume to say that definitely because you received a plenary indulgence, therefore that person in purgatory immediately leaves purgatory. It's possible, but this is where we trust in the Lord and we know that in his mercy and justice, he apportions this as he sees fit.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks so much. And this is just for people deceased in this time at this
right.
time, right? Not for people who are living. But there's other ones another time maybe for people who are living?
Oh, sure. So, for example, I mean, you can't, let me put it this way. The only living person that you can obtain an indulgence for is yourself. You can't obtain an indulgence for your next door neighbor or for your husband. You can't apply it to somebody who's living other than yourself. So you can gain an indulgence for yourself and or you can gain indulgences and offer them for the souls in purgatory or maybe a deceased loved one. So right now, take for example, Jenny, here at Relevant Radio, we're in the midst of a novena for the Holy Souls that began on the 2nd of November. And so if you were to go to relevantradio.com, you could... There's still time for you to participate, and what you could do is you could put the names of the deceased loved ones that you would like all the rest of us to pray for, and we will pray for, pray for them by name. So,
I did.
Good.
Names. I did.
Very good. Okay.
But I didn't get to pray all the prayers each day, so I can't. If I pray them now, I can't make up for those days. I can only have it from today till the 8th.
No, you can. You can. No, you can do that.
Okay.
Yeah, so just, you know, pray all the prayers if you missed yesterday or the day before. Just pray those prayers. It's not like God is waiting for you to slip up and say, sorry, you don't qualify, you missed yesterday. God is not like that, obviously.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, and thanks for all you and everyone at Relevant Radio does. God bless you guys.
Thank you, and God bless you too. We're here to help each other, right? You're welcome.
Right.
888-914-9149. Let's go to... Actually, I was going to go to line 12, but I won't now. I'll go to line 12 in a little bit. How about Modesto in Newark, California? Hello, Modesto.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. Do you by chance go to St. Edward's Catholic Church in Newark, California?
Yes, sir. Exactly.
Yeah, I know that church well. I've spoken there many times. Well, three or four times at least. The great Father... Keyes used to be the pastor there, a good friend of mine, Father Jeffrey Keyes.
What's the name of the pastor?
Him.
Okay. But anyway, this is my question. I heard over the radio and Catholic something, Action or ENWT, and it says that you will be saved by faith alone. And what I heard, that alone was added by Martin Luther. And it... the Bible says, really says that you'll be saved by faith. What's the difference between those two?
Okay. Well, the Bible doesn't say that you're saved by faith per se. Jesus does talk about, for example, when he cures somebody, he would say, your faith has saved you. So there are passages that refer to that. But in context, in Ephesians 2, beginning in verse 8, it says, for by grace you have been saved through faith. This is a gift of God. This is not of works, lest anyone should boast. So the operative word here is grace, and it's God's grace that saves us. Now, how do we appropriate God's grace? We appropriate it by having faith in him. So faith is necessary for salvation. It's not the only thing necessary for salvation, but it is necessary for salvation. And as it says in Ephesians 2, that's how you appropriate this saving grace. But even the faith itself, as we're told there, is a gift of God. So this is why we can't boast about it, because it's not coming from us. It's God's grace that enables you to have that saving faith. Now, in the same vein, you also cooperate with God's grace, and we call that works. And even faith itself is a kind of a work. It's a form of a work, because God is not having faith in himself and pretending that you had faith in him. You are the one who has that act of faith. That's an act. It's something you yourself do. You're participating and cooperating with God's grace. But you don't take credit for it, because it's a gift from him by his grace that you're able to do that. And the same is true of works. So once you have been saved by grace through faith, and it's an ongoing process, and you can lose your salvation along the way, God forbid, but you cooperate with those graces through what St. Paul in Romans calls the obedience of faith, and that is also known as good works. So you do those things that the Lord commands you to do. And St. Paul has a lot to say about that. I'll just share with you one passage, Modesto, that will help you see this maybe a little more clearly. It's in Romans chapter 2, and I'll just read this section. There's more to it, but this is for the sake of time. In verse 1 of chapter 2, therefore you are without excuse, every one of you who passes judgment. For by the standard by which you judge another, you condemn yourself, since you, the judge, do the very same things. We know that the judgment of God on those who do such things is true. Do you suppose then, you who judge those who engage in such things and yet do them yourself, that you will escape the judgment of God? Or do you hold his priceless kindness, forbearance, and patience in low esteem, unaware that the kindness of God would lead you to repentance? By your stubbornness and impenitent heart, you are storing up wrath for yourself for the day of wrath and revelation of the just judgment of God, who will repay everyone according to his works. Eternal life to those who seek glory, honor, and immortality through perseverance in good works, but wrath and fury to those who selfishly disobey the truth and obey wickedness. Yes, affliction and distress will come upon every human being who does evil, Jew first and then Greek, but there will be glory, honor, and peace for everyone who does good, Jew first and then Greek. There is no partiality with God. And you can compare this with 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 10, where he says the same thing. So here, what we're seeing is what he refers to as the obedience of faith. And he talks about how the reward for that is salvation. And what this means is we have to stand back and see that this is all God's doing. It's his grace from beginning to end. But his grace enables us now to have that saving faith, which is not saving us by faith alone. Because if, as St. James says, if faith is present without works, it's dead. And Martin Luther, to get back to your question, Martin Luther posited the novel view that we are justified by faith alone. And what's interesting about that phraseology, sola fide is the formula in Latin, faith alone, or by faith alone. It is found as a term only once in Scripture, and that's in James chapter 2. Begin reading in verse 22 to get the full effect here. But he says, you see then that a man is justified by works and not by faith alone. And so Martin Luther's error, among others, was to assume, therefore, that justification or being put in a right relationship with God was an extrinsic, alien, forensic, there are different terms that are used for it, action that's external to you and is done to you. And there are analogies that were used, like, imagine that you, the guilty sinner, are a dunghill, And there's a beautiful snowfall that covers the dunghill, so that when God looks at this dunghill, which is you, the snowfall that covers it is the righteousness of Christ. And his view is that, in essence, that's what God looks at. He doesn't look at the reality of who you are, a pile of dung. He looks at the beauty and the purity of the righteousness of Christ, which covers you. So this becomes a legal fiction where God reckons unto you righteousness that is alien to you. It's coming from Jesus. Now, that is true insofar as we don't have any righteousness of our own that doesn't come from God. But the mistake here is to assume that God doesn't actually transform the sinner and sanctify the sinner. And indeed, he really does. So it's not a legal fiction. You're not anymore a dunghill covered by new fallen snow. You're not left as you were. You have now been changed when you are justified and you are saved and you are sanctified. Those things are all happening. One of the problems of Martin Luther was that he tried to separate these things into separate items, you might say, that justification was separate from sanctification. They're not. They're two sides of the same coin. I would recommend, Modesto, a book by Steve Wood on the doctrine of salvation. It is a book for, not that you're a Protestant, but many Protestants are interested in what the Catholic Church teaches on this issue. And so his book is a way to explain to Protestant folk, and I know this may sound kind of ironic because they pride themselves in being the ones who read the Bible, but he explains to them what the Bible teaching is, in fact, on salvation and justification. So that would be a good place to turn if you want further info. Thank you. Appreciate that. 888-914-9149. Here's an email that comes in from Rosa. Now, my last call was from Modesto in California. This is from Rosa in Modesto, California. And this came in not too long ago. She says, Patrick, a family with six children went for communion, and three of the children weren't old enough, but they had their arms crossed over their chest to receive a blessing, and the parents and the older siblings took communion. She says, I understand it's time-consuming and not part of our tradition to bless people who go up for a blessing, but the priest made gestures of being upset and to get out of his way, I guess get those children out of his way. She said, it was harsh to see, but I offered my communion for the family and the priest, thinking it would pass. Finally, after Mass, they offered a presentation of babies, which happens once a month in our parish. The same family went up to present their newborn. The priest asked the family if they were ashamed for having so many children and if they didn't have anything to keep them busy instead of making babies. This is appalling. The couple was humiliated and confused about the questions that came from their pastor. He continued to push them to answer. Why didn't they stop having children? And finally, the husband said, because we will have as many children as God gives us. And the priest said, well, you won't have much time to make any more because you'll be busy working to feed them. They walked away. But the priest said they were acting irresponsibly by bringing children into the world as if they were rabbits. And so Rosa says, I feel for that family because they left the church right away before the community walked out. I will continue to pray, but there's no way to dialogue with this priest on this or other issues. That leaves the community confused about his comments and errors in teaching. It's hard to imagine that a minister of the gospel, that a Catholic priest, would be so brutal in saying something so terrible and wrong like that to a family who's just trying to cooperate with God's grace. God bless this family for having the courage not only to, you know, put up with that kind of nonsense, but also be a sign of contradiction to the world. Who knows what might be driving the priest to have that kind of anger in his heart. I couldn't begin to know. But what a terrible thing for him. Now, that was a form of martyrdom for that family. But if you see them again in church, I would go over to them and befriend them and tell them how happy you are for them and how proud you are of them that they are showing such a good Christian witness and being open to life and being generous with God. And God is certainly being generous with them by blessing them with children. And console them if they need consoling and encourage them so that they don't feel like, well, if even the priest thinks that we're ridiculous and crazy for having children, God forbid that they might wind up leaving the Catholic Church. What a terrible thing that would be. So I hope that you see them again. And maybe your encouragement will go a long way for them. Thank you for that. We're going to take a break and we'll be back with more right after this. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
I got a note here from Don listening on... well, actually, I don't know where Don's located, but he says, when we get to heaven, what if we do not experience our loved ones there? Would we know they are in purgatory? So will we be relieved? I think the answer is yes, Don. I think that God gives those in heaven certain knowledge that is beyond what we know. Jesus said that there's great rejoicing in heaven when even one sinner repents. So it seems very suggestive of the fact that God permits them to know things about what's going on here on earth, or in the case of those who are in purgatory. And naturally, one of the reasons is so that we would pray for them, because we help each other in prayer. Interesting question. Thank you for that. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Barbara in Dubuque, Iowa. Hello, Barbara.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I have just recently come across a book by Father Charles Theodore Muir. Haven't read it yet, but it is the name of it is Murder in the 33rd degree, and it's about the Gannon Cardinal. He was a cardinal at that time. Mm-hmm. Gannon investigation of the Vatican Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you read the book and if you had any comment on it.
No, I haven't read the book. I'm familiar with the thesis behind the book, that the Vatican is rife with Freemasons who are masquerading as, you know, bishops and cardinals and things like that. So I'm aware of the theory, but I've never read that book. Now, one thing I can tell you is that Pope Paul VI himself, he talked about how he perceived that the smoke of Satan had entered into the very sanctuary of the church, and that seems to be language suggesting truth to this theory. There's one figure in particular, Annibale Bunini, who was a priest during the time of the Second Vatican Council, and it is widely thought, especially in traditional circles, that he was a Freemason and an architect of some of the problems that occurred at Vatican II, including with the Mass. There is, however, and I think it's Angelical Press, if I'm not mistaken, there is a new book by Yves Chiron, C-H-I-R-O-N, that's a biography of Bunini. And although he delves deeply into this issue, I think he, in a way, kind of debunks the hardcore idea of Bunini being a Freemason, or at least this as nefarious as some people think he is. So the reason I reference that book is because it's an effort, or it's a recent effort, to try to see in greater detail what may be going on by looking at that particular person. So really, the idea of the church being infiltrated by not just Freemasons, but atheists and communists and others, this is an idea that has been around for a long time, going back into the early part of the 20th century. So whether or not this book has merit, I don't know, because I've never read it. But I think it would be probably along the same lines if I had to guess.
Well, I do appreciate that, and I do want to make a comment on it. You know, cardinals and priests are people, and the church is made up of sinners, and there definitely is corruption, but there always will be corruption, and people should not give the faith up because of books like this that come forth now. That was in 1973, and I just feel that just pray, because we're going to have these kind of things happen century after century after century. So
that's true. Well, don't forget, and I'm sure you haven't, that Jesus handpicked the 12 apostles, and guess who was in there with him? Judas, the great betrayer. So, yes, I mean, what you're saying is self-evidently true. All we have to do is read the Gospels to see that for his own mysterious reasons, the Lord chooses sinners to do his work, and sometimes those sinners can greatly betray him, starting with Judas. So, yeah.
When I always hear something negative about the Vatican or a certain pope, and that I always remember that King David, which the Lord loved deeply, was a murderer and an adulterer.
Yeah, these are one of the themes that I talk about, not frequently, but whenever they come up, that's true. So I'm with you on that, Barbara. Thank you. Let's go now to Irene in Rancho Cucamonga. Good morning, Irene.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
And my question is, in the past, maybe it's going on 3 months now, but the last month I had, or the last 2 months, I had very bad back problems. I couldn't kneel. I couldn't stand. And sitting even for a long time is a problem. I went to confession thinking that I was going to hell in a handbasket, knowing I hadn't been to Mass. And then the priest told me not to worry and that I could sit. Mm-hmm. You know, if I wanted to go to Mass, I could sit. Mm-hmm. And so I did, and I wondered how it was just felt odd. Everybody was standing and sitting and kneeling, and I was sitting, and people were kind of like, what's... And I didn't know what to do. I mean, even to this day, I feel like I committed all these mortal sins.
No, not at all. So let me make sure I understand, Irene. You had a bad back problem. You were in pain. You went to Mass, and while you were at Mass, because of your back pain, you sat throughout the Mass rather than stand or kneel, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so you didn't commit any sin at all. First of all, what a great thing that you were at Mass. Even there are a lot of people who would have just said, well, I've got back pain, I'm not going to go to Mass. So what a heroically good thing you did by pushing through your pain and going to Mass. Not everybody would do that. And you did the best you could because of the pain. God doesn't expect the impossible from you. And he knows that if you're in pain, that you're just not able to kneel and stand and sit, or kneel and stand. So you didn't do anything wrong. If anything, I would say that you were a very, if I can use the term again, a very edifying example to other people that you went to Mass anyway. And you did the best you could.
Well,
that's a beautiful thing.
Thank you for that. It's been on my mind for quite a while, but I just, the priest said it was okay to sit. And
he was right.
I did.
Yeah, you did nothing wrong.
But here, all that time before I went to the priest, I thought I was just going to hell in a handbasket for not attending Mass.
No, banish those thoughts from your mind, Irene. Banish those thoughts, because unless you decided to not go to Mass on Sunday just because you didn't want to, in which case, okay, yeah, that would be a serious sin. But I can tell that that's not how you are. You were so wanting to go to Mass that you went even while you were in a great deal of pain. So you didn't commit any sins at all.
Okay,
everything you're describing to me sounds heroic, not sinful.
Well, I just had to do that. I'm a cradle Catholic, and I knew from a very early age that not going to Mass is a mortal sin.
But it's only a mortal sin if you intentionally miss Mass on Sunday. If you're ill, and you certainly were at that time, if you were in some way prevented from going to Mass due to illness or some other problem, that obligation is not incumbent upon you. It's only incumbent upon those, and that's the vast majority of all of us, who are able to go to Mass. There's no sin in being prevented from going to Mass due to illness. No sin whatsoever.
Well, I thank you for that, Patrick. It puts my mind at ease a little more right now. I just know the priest was very kind, too. And he says, you're not going to favor all the people there. You're going, you know, you're not going to be going if you're ill. And so he gave me that permission to sit if I wanted to.
You don't have to worry about that at all. Please take my reassurance to heart. You did nothing wrong. No reason to feel concerned about it. And you sound like a very prayerful woman. So please do remember us at Relevant Radio in your prayers, Irene. We would sure appreciate that. God bless you. Let's go to Dan now in Providence, Rhode Island. Good morning, Dan.
Hi, Patrick. Good morning right back to you. Listen, I'm leading a study group on Lexio Mary with the FORMED program. It's really good. And if somebody had a question, I wasn't quite sure how to answer, so let's ask Patrick.
Okay.
The question was, how can Mary be conceived without original sin? You know, her parents being Anne and Joachim, how was it that she can be conceived without original sin? So I thought, you know, I'd ask him, kind of give him an answer. I'm going to see him at the noontime mass, so thought I'd ask you.
Sure, I'll be quick since you have to get into Mass. So with God, nothing is impossible. And so this is one reason why the Church does not say that Mary had to be immaculately conceived so that she could pass on an immaculate human nature to her son Jesus, from whom he took all of his humanity in terms of his physical humanity. Mary did not need to be immaculately conceived for that to take place. And the proof of this is that her parents did not need to be immaculately conceived for her to be immaculately conceived. So God, in his sovereign decree, he preserved the Blessed Virgin Mary from the moment of her conception, free from all sin. She was free from the taint of original sin, the condition of original sin. She was free from all actual sin throughout her entire life. And so this is an act of God. He can clearly do whatever he wants to do, and that's how he did it with Mary, and it didn't depend upon her parents being immaculately conceived. You see what I mean, Dan?
Hello? Yeah, I kind of lost part of you there, but I can catch you on the podcast. Yeah, good. Okay, so I think what I could do is like just listen on the podcast and play it back for the class when we meet.
Yeah, there you go.
That'd be good. Yeah. All right, Patrick, thank you so much for everything that you do. Really appreciate it.
That's kind of you, Dan. Thank you for that. One thing to remember, everybody, is that the Immaculate Conception has nothing to do with how Jesus himself was conceived. Some people make that mistake. That's called the virgin birth. And so just to summarize, the virgin birth is that Jesus was conceived by the Holy Spirit. You can read about that in Luke chapter 1. It was a miraculous conception, and there was no human father involved. St. Joseph, his foster father, was indeed the true husband of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Although they never consummated their marriage, they had a true and valid marriage. And St. Joseph was not only the husband and the protector of Mary, but also the foster father and protector of Jesus. So that is known as the virgin birth. The Immaculate Conception, once again, has nothing to do with that. The Immaculate Conception is the dogma that Mary was conceived free from all sin. And she, for that matter, was conceived in the womb of her mother according to the normal means. So Mary, her parents, they conceived her the way parents conceive children. So please don't be thrown off by that phrase, Immaculate Conception. It has nothing to do with the act of conception or the manner of conception. It has to do with Mary being preserved from the moment of her conception, free from all sin. Let's go now to Noah in Southgate, California. Hi, Noah.
Hey, Patrick Madrid. Love you guys. You guys do a great
Thank
job.
You. Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. My quick question is, when a spouse is sick or a child, how do we proceed going to Mass when he's sick on that Sunday?
Well, the Church says that if you are needed to be at home to take care of a sick child, for example, and in fact, I think that is the actual example that's used in the Church's law. If you consult canon law, it gives that as one example of where you might not be able to go to Mass because you have to take care of a sick child. That obligation does not fall on you. You can say that you're dispensed. I don't know if that's the canon law term for it, but you would be, in essence, dispensed from that obligation. If your wife is ill and she requires you to be there in case something happens and you can't get to Mass, you're dispensed from the obligation. So things like that. If you yourself are ill, if some natural disaster happens and you just can't get to Mass, you're dispensed. But the Sunday obligation is for all of us who have the ability to go to Mass and can get to Mass. We have the obligation. but when those extenuating circumstances arise, that would mitigate that obligation.
Okay. All right. Well, got you. For a drastic situation when the world's ending, the end of times, the very, like, end of times when you can't go to mass and all that, I mean, I guess it's acceptable, right? And stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, when the end of the world comes, and if the Antichrist has destroyed all the Catholic churches, you're dispensed from your Sunday obligation. If you can't get to Mass, you can't get to Mass. God understands that. If you can get to Mass, go to Mass. That's the rule of thumb.
Okay, thank you.
You got it. Thank you. Sandra in Highland, Indiana, and all the others who are holding online, I apologize. I'm not going to be able to get to your call just because you hear the music saying that we've got to wrap things up. So thank you for your patience. Do call me next time, and I'll do my very best to get you on the air. Well, another week has gone by. It's hard to imagine, but here we are. I'll look forward to being with you again soon. And until then, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.
I want you to know it's over. Whoever dared you.
Bye.